Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Mike Newell's 2010 film, Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
It's just another rainy day in New York City.
What? Who sang that song originally?
That is Chicago.
Okay, all right.
Happy birthday to MTV. Turned 30 today, August 1st, 1981.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah. And I saw that you posted the trivia question of what was the first video to ever play on MTV.
Yeah.
Actually, I know the answer.
Oh, you didn't click ahead to find the answer?
I didn't. Right. I'm pretty sure it's Video Killed the Radio Star. Is that right?
Yeah, that is correct.
Okay, good stuff.
By the Buggles.
Okay.
I believe that was their one and only hit.
Okay.
If that was even a hit, I don't know.
Right. All right. Good stuff. So if you guys are just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with the character name game, transition into our media consume section, where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-NJNM, which is 6566, or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So I've got the character name game again this week. I'm going to kind of take up the mantle of that while Tyler is running his up your specs game that we've got that we'll play near the end. But in the meantime, the character name game, I'll give Tyler a character's name, and he'll have to tell me at the end of the episode which movie that character is from, keeping in mind that there has to be some sort of connection to a movie that came out in wide release this past weekend. So,
Tyler, Zathura.
Zathura. No, that's incorrect. Character name for this week is Evan Baxter. So be thinking about that, and then we'll come back to it at the very end. So let's go ahead and move into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool events we've gone to, or concerts, or even comics, or anything like that, books we've been reading. Tyler, let's start with you. What have you been consuming lately?
Well, last week, Thundercats, the new series that has been long awaited by Thundercats fans, premiered. I don't know. Did you check this out? Did you see this?
I have not seen it.
Oh, it's... if you recall, I think I've seen enough episodes of Thundercats to kind of know what goes on in the old series from the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
I think it premiered in like 1985, but it was like the first season was ready in like 1983. So it took a couple years to like come onto television.
Okay.
And the newest incarnation, I guess we could call it. I haven't read anything on it, so I don't know like if it's in the timeline of the old show. But the guy that voiced the main character Lion-O from the old series voiced Lion-O's father in this new series.
Okay.
So you could like based on like the character in the new series, he's basically old Lion-O, even though his name's like Claudius or something.
Right.
And there are similar characters to the show, although they have kind of a different origin story. It's basically like J.J. Abrams' Star Trek.
Okay.
That could be a good comparison, where things are kind of the same, but they're different.
Yeah.
Instead of their planet blowing up and them coming to Third Earth, I think they stay on that planet and the city is destroyed as opposed to the entire planet.
Okay.
But there was only the one episode. I guess it was two episodes, really, but it was an hour long.
Okay.
Good animation. Solid action sequences, very fluid. It's not very, like, anime is very slow. Like, they use the same cells and just move a mouth or something, or
right,
they use the same action sequence over and over again where it becomes kind of flat.
Yeah.
I didn't see that here, although it looks sort of Japan-made. so many words thrown into that one word.
Right.
But yeah, Snarf, if you're a fan of the old Thundercats, was annoyingly verbal in the old cartoon, but in this one he's like a normal cat. He doesn't say anything.
Okay.
He kind of looks like a Pokemon, which is kind of weird.
All right. So what was your, I mean, you said that you knew enough about the old series. You didn't really watch it a bunch as a kid or anything?
No, I knew about it as a kid, I think. But I didn't start like watching it until it like popped up on demand. I was like, oh, Thundercats, I'll watch an episode of that. But yeah, it's like this group of cats. There's like Panthro and Chitara.
Yeah. And they anthropomorphic cats.
Yeah, they walk on two legs.
Yeah.
And there's Tigra, and they fight a mummy, ironically called Mumbra. Mm. There's like lizards that fight them with battle axes and stuff. You know, your usual fantasy with animals epic. Sure.
Yeah, I mean...
But it's kind of... go ahead.
No, go ahead.
It's interesting because in this new show, there's like all these secret messages about like class systems, how the cats feel themselves to be a superior species over other animal species that world. I think that's kind of something they put in for older fans of the series as opposed to the kids that might be watching it.
Okay, so you don't think that was present in the earlier series?
Not from what I told. There were some kiddie messages, but there wasn't anything deep like class structure or caste system or anything like that.
Yeah.
That I kind of picked up on the newer episodes.
Right on.
Yeah.
So do you think this is okay for somebody to jump in if you have no history with this?
Yeah, it's like, if you've got an inkling of you're like, he says it's an okay show. I didn't watch old Thunder. Yeah, you don't have to watch the old series.
Yeah.
To pick it up. But, okay. You know, if you're a fan of like any type of DC driven cartoon show,
mm-hmm.
that they're kind of coming out with that are becoming a little more popular. You know, it's a good addition to that Friday night.
Like the Brave and the Bold that you've talked about on this
podcast. Yeah, the Brave and the Bold, and then that Young Justice that came out recently. Although I'm getting, it was good, but they only came out with like 7 episodes or something. Okay. I don't know if that's the correct number, but they've been playing the same episodes over and over again since the show came out. And, like, nothing has progressed.
Ah, gotcha.
But yeah, I would put that in the same category as watchability.
Okay. Yeah, I was just gonna say that I've never seen any. I don't know anything about the Thundercats. As a kid, I kept my anthropomorphic cats kind of closed off to a series called SWAT Cats. Do you remember the show?
Yeah, I do.
That was awesome.
I would turn off the TV.
You would turn it off?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think it came on after Captain America. I was like, SWAT Cats.
Ugh. Dude, it was so good. These cats
I know what they did.
Anthropomorphic, and they flew fighter planes, and just, it was good.
Yeah, they were mechanics.
Yes. They worked in a junkyard.
Like, oh, it's time to rescue the world. And then they'd hop in a jet, and I was like, nah, I'm watching Darkwing Duck. My anthropomorphic jollies somewhere else.
Yeah, there you go.
And DuckTales.
Nice. All right, what else have you been checking out?
Oh, that's it.
Okay. Didn't you say something about poetry that you wanted to
do? Oh, yeah, we're getting to that when we start our review.
Okay, all right.
Oh,
So there's a little tease for what's sure to come. For me, I just wanted to quickly mention I've been getting back into season 2 of Breaking Bad. I've taken a long break from that series. I talked about it before. This is the show about a high school chemistry teacher who contracts cancer and has to use his chemistry skills to make meth and sell it to make enough money to support his family because he's kind of, you know, it's like a middle class family. He doesn't have a lot of money to pay for all the treatments and stuff. All the time, you know, if he was actually paying for all of that with his normal salary, he would, when he died, he would have nothing to leave his family with. So he's using these skills to make meth and sell it in a New Mexico town. I think it's Albuquerque or something like that. And he's like teaming up with this drug dealer who actually is a former student of his. So it's getting pretty good. I stopped watching it in the middle of season 2 because I was just busy doing a bunch of other things and didn't really think the series was picking up as like it was paced as well as it could have been, but I'm starting to, you know, get into the latter half of season 2 right now, and it's starting to get really good. Danny Trejo made an appearance in the most recent episode that I watched, and it gets pretty explosive. It's awesome stuff. So I just wanted to give a little shout out to Breaking Bad real quick. Tyler, have you seen any episodes of the show at all?
Does it get literally explosive?
It does. Yeah. My TiVo hasn't blown up, if that's what you mean by literally. There are explosions in the
show.
You
have a TiVo?
Well, you know what I mean. Like my DVR.
There we go. No, I haven't seen any episodes.
Okay. I think you would like it. But anyway, the movie that I wanted to talk about, and Tyler, I'm sure you read this review that I wrote on notjustnewmovies.com, is for a movie called The Clock. And this is a really interesting movie. It's actually the most fascinating film I've ever seen in my life. It is kind of, I say directed, quote-unquote directed, by a guy named Christian Marclay. And the reason I put the word directed in quotes is because the movie The Clock is comprised solely of footage from other movies in which characters are looking at the time, or the time is displayed in some way. And it's a 24-hour film, and there's no storyline or coherent score or consistent characters. It's just thousands of clips of different movies. And, you know, characters will be walking through Grand Central Station and you'll see the time kind of prominently displayed. And then it'll cut to somebody just looking at their watch and it'll be the next minute. And it serves as a functioning clock. So it's really interesting to watch. Tyler, I'm sure you have some sort of question about this.
You put me on the spot there, buddy.
Well, I
don't know.
All right, fair enough.
Okay, I just keep talking. Let me think about my question.
No, that's fine. I just didn't, like, when I saw it, when I saw that this thing was a movie before I actually saw the film, I had a bunch of questions of, like, how is that possible? Like, is it every single minute of every day? How does it work time-wise? Isn't exactly, like, synchronous or whatever?
Synchronous?
Yeah, maybe. Synchronicity.
Ooh, that's a better one. I like that one. Ooh, so The Police. Nice.
Obviously I didn't watch the entire 24-hour thing. I saw it from 9:30-ish at night until 10:30-ish at night. And
it was a solid hour.
It was cool because I was there at 10:04 p.m., which is the time that the lightning strikes the clock tower in Back to the Future, which is like one of the most iconic time moments in movie history, I think. So it was kind of cool to see
that. Was that in the film?
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
At 10:04?
Yeah, at exactly 10:04. Wow. It's really sweet the way that they were able
to. All right, I'll give them that much.
Put it together. So it took this dude and his team of editors a year to just find the footage and see if it would be possible to even put this together, like find every minute of every day, or of a full day, rather. And then it took them 2 years to actually edit it and put it together. And the reason that it took them so long to put it together is because the transitions are actually really interesting. Like, at one point, Winona Ryder in some movie, maybe Heathers or something like that, I've never seen this movie, but she is talking to someone about how, on the phone, having this like really weird sexual conversation about how she wants to do two guys at this like at the same time or something, and then it cuts to a clip from GoldenEye, and it's Pierce Brosnan and Sean Bean looking at their watches at the same time. So it's like literally two guys looking at the same time, quote unquote. You know, it's like this kind of ridiculous meta level of everything that kind of draws some laughs from the audience because of the dialogue that came before, you know, like just ways that he kind of leads things in. It's kind of crazy. Like a character will open a door and then they'll cut to another character shutting a door coming into a house that's totally different, obviously, maybe even from a different genre or like, you know, 50 years separated in movie history, but then the time will still be consistent all the way through. So I just wanted to throw out a huge shout out to the making of this movie and the guys who put everything together, because it's really, really awesome. The reason that it's so compelling is because you don't have to follow a traditional story, and you never know what's going to come next. It could be any clip from any movie, you know, it could be anything. You just have no idea. And it's not only big shots of massive clocks like Big Ben or, you know, anything in the Grand Central Station or whatever. Sometimes it's just really quick shots of like a family eating dinner and the dad's watch just so happens to be visible. And you could tell that Christian Marclay and these guys had to freeze frame it and zoom in just to see what time it was and, you know, it figured out where that needed to be in the rotation, as it were. So it was just really fascinating to watch. I thought it was pretty awesome. This is one of those movies that you'll never be able to see in a real theater because obviously it takes clips of thousands of movies. There's no way they could get the rights to show all that footage. So I saw it at a museum, the LA County Museum of Art. And, you know, I'm sure it'll be going out on the road and stuff like that. So I would recommend, you know, just keeping an eye out in your local museum scene or art scene or whatever. And if you ever get a chance to see The Clock, I would definitely highly, highly, highly recommend it. So that's what I've been watching. Let's go ahead and move on into our review of Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time.
Have you wondered how you could have found such a treasure? The gods have a plan for you, a destiny.
I've seen its power with my own eyes. Releasing the sand turns back time. Only the holder of the dagger is aware of what's happened.
How did you do that?
Only the dagger can unlock the sands of time. And there are those who would use this power to destroy the world.
Time will erase everything.
The only way to stop this Armageddon is for us to take the dagger to the secret guardian temple. We must take it there, Dastan.
You really enjoy telling me what to do, don't you?
Only because you're so good at following orders.
Yeah, don't press your luck.
All right, so The Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time came out in 2010. This movie is directed by a guy named Mike Newell. Tyler, what did you think of this film? First of all, had you seen it before?
No, I had not.
Okay, what did you think about this movie?
I wanted it to be cool because I really like the video game. I wanted it to be cool because I like Strawberry Fields, also known as Gemma Arterton.
Yes, Arterton, I think.
I wanted to enjoy it because it deals with ancient cultures and parkour and time travel.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about how much of those riveting topics were featured in this film.
Okay. But what was your ultimate conclusion about it?
Pass.
Pass. Okay.
On this film, not on the question.
Right. Okay. Thanks for the clarification. Okay. I mean, I wanted to like it too. I had heard nothing but horrible things about it, to be honest with you. But I knew it was kind of popular. I know a lot of people have seen it. So that's kind of, I guess, why the Apple II chose it for us.
Oh, it loves people movies.
It does, yeah. It loves mixing people movies with the most obscure things you can think of, so good old Apple II coming through for us. But anyway, yeah, I wanted to like this one kind of for the same reasons you did, except, you know, it's a video game movie, so right there it's got a huge strike against it. Chances are pretty good if it's a video game movie, it's not going to be a good movie. So, the history is... The streets of Hollywood are littered with the remains of terrible video game movies. Super Mario Brothers. Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to think. Max Payne. There's a lot of really awful ones out there. So,
Resident Evil, I hear, is pretty popular.
Yeah, it's popular. I don't know. I've never seen any of those movies, so I can't really speak to the quality of them.
I'm going to say, is Duck Hunt a movie?
Duck Hunt, I'm surprised it's not a movie yet.
I think that might come out after Battleship.
I would not...
Duck Hunt.
I would not put that...
What happens when ducks get angry?
Revenge of Duck Hunt. Yeah.
I really like this game called Assassin's Creed, and mm-hmm. I think that would make a pretty fair movie.
Yep.
But... This Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, or SOT as I like to call it, had kind of what an Assassin's Creed movie would look like.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked good. We're going to give it that much. Prince of Persia looked okay.
Yeah.
Like the parkour stuff, I believe, was well executed, although there could have been more since the whole game's dynamic lies on you, like running on walls and doing incredible fight scenes and like flipping around on poles, but then falling down a cliff, but then just in time reversing the whole scenario so mm-hmm. that you kind of save your own life.
Yeah.
But again, you know, the movie isn't the video game.
Right.
So they had to put some type of restriction on what was going on, but there it could have been like a, I don't know, like a Chow Yun-Fat John Woo movie or something with a lot better fight scenes instead of the drama that they chose to shove down our throat.
Yeah.
And there were so many, like, narrative pitfalls that I didn't really... Like, by the time it wasn't guessable. Like, I wasn't guessing what was happening, but as there were twists in the story, I was like, that's stupid.
Yeah.
Like, okay, yeah, that's a twist, but it's not a good twist.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's stuff that's, like, just common sense if you've ever seen a movie before, and it's like...
I love that insult.
Well, it is, you know, because you see, like, you see in the beginning, Dastan, Prince Dastan, is just this kind of street
like
rat...
Destiny.
Street rat Aladdin kid parkouring through city rooftops, and he gets adopted by the king because he does a good thing. And then 15 years later, it's like, oh gee, I wonder if there's going to be family drama between the brothers and who's going to be the rightful heir of the throne. And of course, that's what the movie is about. And then, oh gee, I wonder if the Grand Vizier character of Ben Kingsley is going to turn out to be the bad guy because he's got guyliner on and he's bald. Like, of course he's going to be the villain. Like, has this person never seen Aladdin or read Shakespeare or, you know, like, these guys know.
Never played the video game. It was kind of a calling card, too.
Yeah, I mean, the people inside the world, the fictional world of Prince of Persia, the Sands of Time, seem to have no concept of history and, like, you know, kind of the whole history repeating itself story of brothers, you know, like, turning on each other and all this kind of stuff.
Well, perhaps
Go ahead.
Perhaps it was such an ancient time that none of those stories had happened.
Yeah, I guess that's possible. You were talking about narrative pitfalls. That's one of the main things that I noticed. Just the way that they told the story seemed really questionable. In the very beginning, the first thing that you see is text narration with no punctuation, and then it goes into a voiceover narration after that. And I wrote in my notes... text narration with no punctuation to voiceover narration,
Persians aren't known for their grammar.
How dare you insult an entire
Persia no longer exists. It's
entire people.
I think it's like it was turned into like the Ottoman Empire, and then that was obliterated after World War I don't know. I'll have to do some research before I start throwing racial slurs.
Yeah, I wouldn't call
about
that a
grammar.
Slur. Yeah,
bad grammar is now a racial slur.
Yeah, anyway, it's like just the way that that they would like constantly tell you everything that's going on through text narration and then explain what was happening, what you just read in the text through the dialogue of the characters, it made the text totally unnecessary. I wrote down an example when
More text throughout the movie?
What's that?
Was there more text?
Oh, yeah.
The movie?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, it was little things here and there. But, like, okay, I'll give you an example, the one that I wrote down.
Okay.
After little Dastan has been adopted, and then it goes 15 years later, right? And then the text disappears, and then more text pops up. It says Persian Borderlands, and it disappears. And then more text pops up that says Holy City of Alamut.
Yep.
And then it shows these guys, like, riding up on this ledge, looking out, this cliffside, looking out over the city.
And then they say...
and one guy goes, my God, it's Alamut, the holy city, or something. And then the other guy's like, some claim it's sacred. And it's like, why would you put all that text there if those are the first things that those guys are going to say? Like, we already have that information. There's no need for them to say it. Just
That's
pick
awesome.
One or the other. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, some of the things looking cool, and we have to kind of give the movie credit for that. I agree, there was definitely some stuff that looked cool. Dastan's crew kind of rolls in after being ordered not to attack this city. And there's this really cool part where he runs up the side of what, like, scales a building, and then his fellow guys are, like, chilling in the bushes, shooting arrows up for him to climb up on the side of a wall. I was like, that's kind of cool. I've never seen that before.
Although the acting was pretty horrendous.
I mean, yeah, that's a given in this movie. It starts going all as a Persian prince. So,
although the worst of them all had to be, dime favorite Gemma.
Gemma Arterton. Yeah, you know, I actually...
Arterton.
She's not unwatchable as far as bad acting goes. I think she might be... just being kind of pigeonholed into these roles of, like, the ancient princess. Because that seems to be what she's doing a lot. You know, this movie, she also did that in Clash of the Titans, which I did.
Pays the bills.
But, yeah, you know, I don't know. There's something something to be said for maybe the fact that she hasn't been given like a legitimate shot at something, you know, dramatic yet. But so I'm not going to go ahead and just say, okay, Gemma Arterton is like a worthless actress and I'm writing her off. Yeah. So I'll wait a little bit before I make that claim.
I will watch every Gemma Arterton vehicle I can.
She's on the eyes, that's for sure. And this movie goes out of its way to get her into revealing clothing in the most ridiculous situations possible. She just
Princess Jasmine of 2010.
Yeah, basically. There's so much in this movie that was taken from Aladdin and from not only
the Mummy.
Yeah, exactly. Not only the movies of recent years like The Mummy and stuff like that, but and even not only from the Prince of Persia video game series, but also, as you mentioned, from Assassin's Creed, which is a totally separate series that I think, I also agree with you, could be a really cool movie if executed properly. They've actually made some fan films of Assassin's Creed that they shot in these big green screen sound stages that look really cool. So Dastan, like, you know, climbs up on the top of the city at one point and does kind of like the eagle vision. Yeah. And the camera like does the exact same motion. Yeah, like, you know that the guys who are, you know, making the Assassin's Creed game are like, oh, dude, you totally jacked that from us. Come on, what are you doing? So,
what? Come on, no! We were gonna have that in the movie and everything!
Yeah, and the movie's video game sensibility does come through, I mean, pretty often, you know, in the fact that, like, the story is not that great. It's pretty kind of run-of-the-mill, but the action is okay. It's tough to make a video game movie where you can relate relate well to the main character because you're not the main character as you are in the game. You know, you have every kind of amount of control when you're playing the game, and you can't translate that into a movie. So it's just, I think every video game movie has a strike against it just automatically, regardless of the talent or the director or whatever. It's just not the same medium, you know? Like, it's got to be tough to do. So, I mean,
well, you know, they were trying to pick up on the franchise ability of like Pirates of the Caribbean,
yeah,
and the Haunted Mansion.
Yeah,
just kidding. Definitely a bomb. But yeah, they were trying to make like, oh, Prince of Persia, that's gonna be Disney's new cash cow.
Yeah,
and I don't think there probably is a Prince of Persia 2 coming out, who knows.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I don't know what's gonna happen again.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about that, but
this time even sandier. It's in my shoes.
Yeah. I don't really know.
Because I think I remember the end. Did you ever play the Prince of Persia game?
I did the original one, and then I also played the sequel. I don't remember exactly what it's called, but the Warrior Within or the Two Thrones or something like that. And then I didn't finish that one, but I did play Prince of Persia: The Sands of Time, the video game, and beat it. And it was a great game. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I remember that one taking place like within one city, and he was trying to get to this massive tower that had the hourglass at the top. And
yeah,
I think the hourglass or whatever was at the bottom of the or in the ground in this one.
Yeah,
I think it would have been a little more epic had they reversed it like they did, or they would have followed the video game a little more closely.
Yeah.
Because, like, the whole game, like, all the levels in the game are him, like, going through this city trying to find a way into the tower, and then he gets into the tower and he makes his way up. But, yeah, like, just the storyline was just confusing because, like, all these things were happening. Like, the brother thing happened, and then now he's on the run, and he runs into Alfred Molina's character.
Yes.
And that stuff happens, and then they're out in the desert, and something goes wrong, they're kidnapped or something. And like, it was just like the same thing happening four times before the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, we lost the dagger. Oh, the bandits helped us. Oh, we lost the dagger again, and we're imprisoned. Oh, the bandits helped us.
Yeah, and then Alfred Molina would just come back. Like, he would keep coming back, and you would be like, didn't we just see this guy? Like, what are they doing? They had this big, like, ostrich race scene.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. Alfred Molina's character is probably my favorite.
Yeah, I would give them credit for that, because that's another thing that I've never really seen in a movie before. But I think Alfred Molina, what would you say?
Ostrich racing. I think the first ostrich race on film.
Yeah, he was basically just doing his best Captain Jack Sparrow impression, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and you were talking about them trying to capitalize on the Pirates franchise. That's where I think it was most evident to me. You know, it's like Alfred Molina as like this kind of, you know, maybe drunken, just kind of like stumbling around Sheik, who has like these really weird like tax claims of like, you know, this is why we don't pay taxes. We're building up our reputation like the Dread Pirate Roberts in Princess Bride, just to avoid paying taxes. And they kind of like shoehorn that stuff in. Like at one point, somebody is telling Alfred Molina's character about the Hassassins, or however you say that, like it's kind of weird 300 immortal type guys. And he's like, a secret government killing activity. That's why I don't pay taxes. It's just like, kids aren't going to care about that. It's such a stupid line. There's no need to have that character have any sort of like political bent to him.
It's burgeoning anarchic rebels. Turn against your government, children.
Yeah, I don't know. This whole movie is just, it kind of lacks a certain level of, it lacks a spark, I'd say. It's just, everything seems pretty plodding. Like you said, a lot of it seems like the same stuff happens over and over again. They leave the city, they're just like out in the desert. Dastan like breaks back into the city, and then he leaves the city again. He's out in the desert again. At that point, after he breaks back out of the city, he just wanders through the desert and happens to run into Gemma Arterton's character in the desert. You know how big that is? Like, how little, how, like, unlikely it is to run into one person like that?
Yeah, I mean, I kept comparing it to The Mummy, which was kind of a regal look at an ancient culture. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of the dialogue was unnecessary. Like, it would have been cinematically better had the character said less or said nothing at all. Like, it was just kind of cluttered.
Yeah.
And you had all this, like, great set design and, like, this environment, but at its core, it's a kid's movie, so, you know, it's not going to be epic. It's not going to be, would call, like, adventurous or some, you know, witty dialogue or
right.
Good dialogue. It's a kid's movie.
Yeah, they try to make the scope really big, but it's really not. Like, just because you show a couple sweeping shots of the desert and you have, like, a giant tower located in the middle of a huge CG city, that doesn't mean that the movie's got a big scope, you know?
There's no Lawrence of Arabia.
That's for sure. and yeah, like at one point, all of a sudden, these characters are walking through the desert, and then they're just in a snow-covered mountain range, and it's like, wait, I'm pretty sure that you would need weeks to travel that far, and it seemed like it happened over the course of like 3 hours. Like they're continuing the conversation that they had, you know,
3 weeks ago. Hey, remember when you mentioned the myth behind the dagger? Let's start talking about that again.
Hey, remember when you were 43 and now you're 47 and we're still traveling?
Man, when are we going to get back to that city to replace the dagger? like the dagger's history, too, was just kind of, like, they tried to make so much of it when a lot of it could just be mysterious.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need to know that, okay, the little girl talked to the gods.
Right.
And then they gave her a dagger, which is the only thing that can penetrate that thing that holds the sands of time.
Yeah.
Okay, we got it. The dagger in the sands. We know.
Yeah.
Like, but when they put it in there, there's going to be sand going through it and you could do anything.
Yeah.
And then, what happened, what they said was going to happen when the dagger was in there didn't happen. Two, spoiler alert, when time is reversed at the end, why didn't they take the dagger to the resting place that they were going to go to in the first timeline? Why did they just put it back on display again so the next villainous viceroy can come along and steal it again? Prince of Persia 2.
Yeah, maybe.
And, I really thought that the end was going to be like her being like, I remember everything. And he'd just be like, yeah, let's get to it. But now he's got to do the whole courtship thing.
Yeah.
Because he was so close to getting with it. And then now he's got to start all over again.
Yeah.
But I guess she's going to marry him because the hand-holding scene.
Yeah, she
obviously he's the only dude in Persia.
Yeah, she seemed into it.
Yeah, she did.
That's a big part of that's a big problem with time travel movies that they can get into where when they end they cancel out everything that you've seen before, so none of it really matters. Like none of it has any dramatic weight because you can kind of see that coming in the very beginning of right. Like okay, clearly all of this is gonna be reversed as soon as she explains. Which, by the way, Gemma Arterton does a ton of exposition in this movie. Like she
That's the useless dialogue I was talking about.
Yeah, she is laden with exposition here. Just kind of like...
Still love you, Gemma.
Yeah, almost everything that needs an explanation, she's the one to give it. But,
this tent pole needs to be 4.5 feet long before we can put the parchment to protect ourselves from the sandstorm.
Yeah.
British accent.
Yeah, the British accents were... completely idiotic for
we're
this,
in Persia.
For this geography.
Speaking of like that TCM month debate about Arabians being portrayed in films and in the history of films, and then 2010 rolls around and Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time comes out with Jake Gyllenhaal and Ben Kingsley.
Yeah, before we started recording, Tyler and I were talking about the TCM has got, Turner Classic Movies has got like themed months that they do, and one of them was Arabians and film, and this has got to be like a blight upon their
like it just throws like a huge stone through the glass window of like establishing Arabian Americans in film.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
That. So, did you
were talking about something?
I don't remember. It doesn't matter. I was just talking about how Gemma Arterton does a ton of exposition. She just kind of they really do anything possible to get her into those revealing clothes. You know, she just like their dialogue in particular, hers and Jake Gyllenhaal's. Was probably the worst of the movie, like their kind of stupid little banter back and forth, because it made no sense. At one point, you think that she's legitimately angry at him, and then she's like making out with him, seeming like in the next scene, and it's like where is the emotional core of this movie? Like what is going on? Who actually cares about who? They tried to make her out to be some kind of like femme fatale, like you never can trust her because she might steal the dagger and replace it with a walnut cutter or a cracker. And then it's like all of a sudden she just kind of like is jelly in Gyllenhaal's hand. I don't know. It doesn't really... They tried to make her out to be this kind of strong, independent woman, but at the very end, you know, like she basically just kind of is the typical, you know, princess, aka damsel in distress type of thing. Like, they try to have it both ways, but the independent woman thing doesn't work when you cancel out an entire movie of her doing independent-based things, and then just have her kowtow to his demands at the end, you know?
They insist on, like, oh, by the way, unless you forgot, she's an independent-thinking woman, because blah, 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 she retorts everything he says, and the retorts got so...
Yeah.
I better not hit my car. Sorry.
What are you? Are you podcasting on the road?
I'm podcasting from the porch of my house in my rocking chair with the shotgun in lap. Just talking about Prince of Persia, man. That's how I do down here in the dirty South. Anyway, what was I saying? So, like every time Jake Gyllenhaal and her would have a conversation, he'd be like, oh, yeah? Well, la-di-da. And he's like, oh, yeah, because you're a girl. And she's like, I'm a woman, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, okay.
Yeah, and then it would... And then
thanks
it would
for teaching us a lesson.
Right, and then it would cut to her in revealing clothes, and you were supposed to smirk about it, like, oh, Gyllenhaal won that battle.
Just you like... have to feel. Yeah, that's scoundrel.
Okay, one big thing that I wanted to mention. For a movie that's subtitled The Sands of Time, right? it is definitely about that. We'll give it that, right? That's the kind of the...
Well, they're mentioned a lot.
The MacGuffin, if you will, of the story.
The epicenter.
Yeah, that's what they're all after and what they're trying to do with the dagger and everything. But for a movie that's about, and like you said, a video game that really heavily features this reverse time thing, that's a big thing in the game. That, like, you have kind of refillable sand, like hourglasses and stuff in the game, where you can do that seemingly hundreds of times in the game, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, you have to murder people to get more sand, but
right,
it's negligible.
Yeah, it's collateral damage, basically.
Yeah,
Tom Cruise. But in this...
Jamie Foxx.
No, that would just be collateral. Collateral Damage is an actual movie with Schwarzenegger. I'm surprised you didn't.
Yeah, I was getting to that. Don't worry.
Okay.
I was going off the first word, then I was going to go off the two words together.
Yeah, and then I'm sure you would have thrown in a reference to Van Damme and Van Damage in there.
So. Collateral Van Damage.
Anyway, sorry for the tangent. For a movie that, like I said, mentions Sands of Time a lot, it doesn't really use the reversing time thing very often. I think it happens 3 times, right?
yeah, he uses it all up at the beginning, and then she has like a little bit on her necklace, and then...
Yeah.
And then the epic battle.
Yeah.
Three times.
Yeah, so, you know, he does it in the beginning, and there's a scene where the second time he does it, he doesn't even reverse time. Because there's a sequence where they're out in the desert, right? And these snakes kind of come through the sand and jump up and start just attacking people. And it's like the assassins have, like, sent these snakes out to kill everyone, and Gyllenhaal kind of realizes what's going on, and then he pushes the jewel on the hilt of the dagger to reverse time, and like right after this dude throws him the dagger, right? So he pushes it, it does the CG effect as if time had reversed, and then when it kind of gets back to quote-unquote real time, it shows the same shot of that guy throwing him the dagger again. And then he slices the head off of a snake and then goes forward from there. So all the stuff that happened before that still happened. I don't understand why they didn't actually reverse time when... It just seemed like they didn't have enough footage, and they realized that after the movie was done and like had been done shooting for 2 months. And they got to that point in editing and were like, oh my god,
uh-oh,
we totally forgot that we need more footage, so let's try to use this same shot, maybe from a different angle, and then hopefully nobody will notice that time didn't actually get reversed, and the same thing actually happens.
Well, I think the snakes went back into their holes,
and then he
knew where the snakes were going to pop out at.
They showed a couple of them going back into their holes, but then the main snake that they were trying to battle was still in midair when Dastan was thrown the dagger. Like, it just didn't... It didn't really serve the correct purpose. But anyway, I was complaining because for a movie that only uses the thing 3 times in the course of the movie, one of those minimal 3 doesn't even really matter. So it's just like the kind of crux of the story is lost, even with a bunch of money, I'm sure, being spent on those CG effects and everything. So
nice.
Let's talk about the finale, like the final time that he jams the thing into the hourglass or whatever. What did you think about how that whole thing played out and how it looked and how he was like sand surfing and all that kind of stuff?
The sand surfing was that the one where you like front flipped into a doorway across a cavern?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was all right. Did he actually surf? Because I was pretty sure from the trailer he was surfing on something.
No, I don't think.
I mean, kind of stumbling down it.
Yeah, I was being metaphoric, I guess, metaphorical with the sand surfing.
Surfing with the Persian. but the final battle with the Wazir, whatever you want to call him,
mm-hmm.
Jafar.
Yeah.
For those born in the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't great. I mean, it wasn't a great battle. The better battle was him versus the assassin in the dag room.
Yeah.
Or was that even him? That was some other guy.
No, it was. It was Dastan versus the main assassin dude.
Oh, okay.
And then after that, after time had been reversed or whatnot, he fights Ben Kingsley like on the steps of the palace or whatever.
Yeah, I'll get to that.
Okay.
Yeah, the sand where spoiler alert, she falls into the cavern and then all of a sudden like, wasn't there supposed to be like apocalyptic happenings after they did that, regardless of whether time went back anyway?
Like, yeah, I think so. Like, I think they mentioned
like releasing something. The sand, like F going back in time now because the sands are loose and everything's done for.
Yeah, because like cities were supposed to be destroyed, and then
like the sands were supposed to be let loose and then like just wrath upon the earth.
I think what that was, honestly, is that if you stab it, it's one of these two things. Either if you stab the dagger into the glass, then all hell breaks loose. But if you push the button while it's in there, then time reverses as long as you want. So it's that or the other way around. You know, it's one.
Gemma
of two
really things. Should have explained that before she fell into the pit.
Yeah.
If you push the button. Explain more, Gemma.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then like the end. So anyway, spoiler alert again.
Yeah.
The Sands of Time are released. They go back in time to like the very beginning where they sack Alamut, the city.
Yes.
And like they show up and the brothers are like, "Nice job, Destin." And he's like, yeah, freaking uncle's a douchebag." And they're right. going, "Oh, no, he's not." And then he says like three more sentences and they're like, "Okay, we believe you. Let's kill him." And I'm just like, "Okay, you've known this guy your entire life and all of a sudden Destin's like in that scene Kingsley's character was believable as opposed to everyone else who was just kind of now like you could trick these guys into doing anything basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
The way they were so gullible.
Yeah.
Although true, they were still falling for it way too fast.
Right. They were too readily, like, too ready to accept the fact that he was treasonous. But I guess after, like, if Ben Kingsley was smart, he would have just kept playing stupid, like, playing dumb that Dastin was an idiot. But he just decided to attack him in front of everyone and, like, basically admit to being the evil guy.
Right.
So that was just...
And then, I guess it ended after that. Kind of ridiculous event. It ended fairly well because they didn't come out and be like, and then they got married and lived happily ever after, you know, or she remembered everything because she's the guardian.
That's what I was worried about. That
like
that,
a Superman kiss or something.
Yeah, exactly. That because she had this kind of guardian status that maybe she would remember everything or get some sort of flash of everything if she touched him or something stupid.
Right.
So at least they didn't do that. That being said, I still was not a fan of this movie. Like, overall, I think it has some good ideas, but the only reason it does is because the game is cool, and the game has those ideas. So, this movie, you can give it credit, like we said, for kind of looking cool in some areas, and for ostrich racing, and that's about it.
Ostrich racing. Well, let me tell you right now, Ben, it did inspire me to write creatively, and I'll tell you right now, here at Not Just New Movies, the podcast, I'm declaring August Poetry Month. Are you down with this?
I guess so. What do you mean?
Yeah, you got something prepared?
No, I don't have anything. You just did not.
I needed a little outlet because this movie was kind of shitty, so I was like, I need an outlet to improve my viewing of this. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna write. Well, first I thought fan fiction, but then I was like, eh, that's a little too. No pun intended. So I was like, okay, August is going to be Poetry Month at Not Just New Movies, the podcast. And so every week I'm going to do a different type of poem for one of the movies we watched. And I have classical poetry, you know, the ones that rhyme. I've got a couple ones for Prince of Persia.
Oh, well, let's hear them. Go for it.
You want to hit some of that poetry reading music? All right, Ben, you ready for this? Ready for some creative writing? All right, I got three poems for you.
All right.
The last one is tragic.
Are these titled?
Oh, yes, they are, sir.
All right, let's hear it.
All right. The Prince's Tale. Mine hair will hang, my beard doth grow. A white man in Persia may never know the intrepid quest of this young prince, whose one request is to bang forth whence. Eyes like embers, her breasts do enchant. Our love so true, it pleads ye be reverent. With sword in hand, dusty feet on ground, I trudge yon desert. Love's relief nay be found. Ooh, very, 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 very haunting, I'd say.
Yeah, nice. Okay.
Any thoughts on that one?
The breasts.
The breasts do enchant. Our love so true, it pleads ye be reverent.
Yeah, no, I like that.
Not reverent, reverent.
Right, yeah.
Probably misspelled. Okay, the second poem, The Maiden's Song. I protect mine dagger, a task most grim. But would I betray mine gods for him? To end this quest of death I so yearn, yet prince's breath makes loins doth burn. Until that time when our love be true, a grainy darkness will e'er loom in view. A dagger's strike, a dying me, a spoiler alert doth follow thee. Any thoughts on the maiden song?
This is getting kind of creepy, dude. I'm not going to lie.
All right. Hey, it took me, I'm going to say, 15 minutes to write these. So,
okay.
That kind of gives a bad name to poetry, as it's fairly easy to write.
Right. Yeah.
All
right.
Now, here's the tragic one. And I'll tell you the kind of the cruel irony behind this one when I'm done.
All right. Let's hear it.
The Peddler's Requiem.
Ooh.
I sell these lamps, yet with no souls to barter. A violent sandstorm does make my business much harder. When will my small shop get a much-needed loan from this ancient city's council? For me, they ne'er moan. Once I tried thievery, an occupation most foul. A small apple I stole to feed my pet owl. Two hands they chopped off, now the people look in shame. At my handless nubs, in darkness I sit lame. Now, let's bring it back. He sells lamps, okay?
Yeah.
Which, in ancient Persia or ancient Arabia or whatever, would light on fire to give light.
Yes.
Well, the sandstorm's coming through. This guy is getting dark, but he doesn't have any hands.
Right.
So what's he going to light the lamps with?
His nubs.
He can't light the lamps. Maybe you make these available in the post. Maybe some guys. It's copyright, Tyler, of Not Just New Movies.
I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not going to type those up, so.
Oh, I got them typed, baby. Copy a paste.
Okay, alright.
So, yeah, National. August is National Poetry Month here at Not Just New Movies, and I'll be back next week with a haiku.
Okay, I think people
probably will... a couple haikus, since they're pretty easy to write, too.
People will be looking forward to that, I am certain, so...
Yeah, and if you have any poems you want to write about the movies we watch, send them in.
There you go.
At gmail.com.
Yes, do it.
Or read them on a voicemail.
Yeah.
Or Ben. Ben, are you going to write a haiku for next week?
I doubt it very seriously. I think
575, if you think you want to. Five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables.
Yeah, I think this is more of your territory. But yeah, good stuff. All right, so you want to do some closing thoughts on Prince of Persia, the same?
Oh, those are my closing thoughts.
Oh, okay. All right.
If anything, probably do some creative writing instead of watch this movie.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Gemma Arterton, pretty easy to look at. Jake Gyllenhaal, kind of terrible in this movie. It's almost exactly what I'm sure everyone thinks it is. I don't know why we thought it might be anything different. It's pretty questionable. So,
rather sit lame in the darkness, huh?
Yeah. I am rubbing my nubs together. I'm wondering why we watch this. All right. Well, yeah. As Tyler mentioned, if you have any sort of poetry or anything, or if you just saw the movie and you love it or you hate it as well, or you would like to tell us anything ever about anything, you can always feel free to email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. Chances are pretty good that we'll read it on the air, since we rarely get emails these days.
There's a chance, or there's a 100% chance.
Yeah, you can also subscribe for free to this podcast in iTunes. You can leave us a review. That would be awesome. Seriously, people, really quickly, just go to iTunes, leave us a review. That helps us out a lot with visibility and stuff like that. If you have listened to the podcast for a while and you haven't done that yet, please do us a solid and just go donate us, 10 seconds of your time. Check us out on Facebook. Go ahead.
I said, even if you hate the podcast, leave a review, because that helps us too.
Yeah, it does. Just the number. Doesn't matter if they're good or bad. I mean, obviously we'd prefer good, but whatever. Would we prefer good? I don't know. I don't think we would.
I kind of like kind of a scathing review. I'd enjoy that.
Yeah, those are fun too. I mean,
anybody can write nice job, but I really like a hate-filled rant against the quality of this podcast.
Honestly, I'm surprised, Tyler, because I thought we would get a bunch of hate-filled rants of people, spouting fire at me for not liking the Goonies.
I think your Facebook had a lot of that.
Yeah, that's
true. But obviously, all those so-called friends don't listen to the podcast. Maybe you should have a little conversation with them.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah. Okay.
Maybe you should just hire a billboard in L.A.
Maybe.
Either one would work.
I'm sure that's practical. You guys can follow us on Twitter as well. We're on Twitter at twitter.com/NJNMpodcast. Tyler pretty much runs that action. We do have one new Twitter follower, and that is at Charlizzle. So thanks for the follow there. Appreciate it.
Lizzle.
And you guys can also leave us a voicemail at any time, and that is going to be at 904-469-6566. If you do decide to leave us a voicemail, you might sound something like this.
Listen up, fruitcakes. I've heard a lot of stuff in my day. I've been called names, been run through the gauntlet, but you never, and I mean ever, talk bad about the Goonies. You hear me? That was your death sentence. That means your podcast is over. Zero listeners. Seriously, that is... Yeah, that guy, I think God would smite you down if he was listening, but he was just off doing other important stuff, like saving the world. God, you people, not just new movies make me sick. This is an atrocity. Ugh, I can't even finish my sentences. You guys. Blood pressure rising. Ugh.
Honestly, I totally forgot that voicemail was about the Goonies. I wasn't trying to set that up with some sort of fake setup.
And there I go, wishing for hate-filled rants, and what do we get on the voicemail answering machine?
Yeah, there.
A hate-filled rant. Thank you, good sir.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the message. I just wish people would leave their names and maybe, like, where they're from or something like that, just so we can know, just because... so you're not.
I appreciate the malice.
Anonymously leaving us messages. But no, I appreciate that. That's always
it adds a sense of creepiness that this show really needs.
Does the show actually need that?
It's a good. The creepiness of the voicemails are a good accompaniment to the creepiness of my poems.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. All right. Well, let's go ahead and finish up the character name game.
You want to pull that lever for next week, buddy?
Oh yes. Yeah. Thanks for that. Yeah. I totally.
About the Apple II, and you totally. Still haven't introduced me. I'm standing right here, clear as day, with my computer. To acknowledge me.
Tyler, this is only our 51st episode, man. You gotta come.
Only the 51st. Now, still know, you still know in the character name game, I'm guessing the movie, right?
yes.
The Apple II guesses our next movie. I pull a comically sized lever, a la Conan O'Brien on the old late night show.
Yep.
And let's see what we're watching next week.
All right, go
pal. All right, well... I hope you like action and shitty ? Vin Diesel movies. Pitch Black, I believe the first entry into the Chronicles of Riddick anthology.
Interesting.
Films starring Dame Judi Dench as some holographic image, or is that Chronicles of Riddick?
I believe that's the second one.
I've never seen any of these movies.
I haven't either, so that'll be interesting.
Dame Judi, easy on the eyes, I'll tell you that much.
You're insane. So, yeah, Pitch Black
Go ahead.
It's available on Netflix. I'll watch instantly. That's all I was going to say.
Okay. Interestingly enough, I think Dame Judi Dench was in the same acting troupe with famed English actors Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. You could probably look that up and quote me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm right.
Yeah, even if you're wrong, I just like to imagine those three rolling around England just, like, comedying it up. So...
I think they were theater actors.
Oh, you know, whatever.
It wasn't like a stand-up show. It wasn't like Vince Vaughn's Comedy Roundup or whatever that's called.
Right, yes. way to
the
just...
streets be so filled with poor.
Way to destroy my fantasy about them. let's go ahead and finish up the character name game.
Sure.
So, Tyler, you'll be guessing
Bruce Almighty.
Yes, Bruce Almighty is right. Evan Baxter was the character that was too easy.
Steve Carell
plays that character, and Steve Carell also, for those of you who didn't know, is in a movie called Crazy Stupid Love, which came out this past Friday. So
I've also accepted Evan Almighty.
I suppose, yeah. I suppose I would have.
Okay, my guess, I'm changing my guess then.
Both of them would be right. So, okay. Nice.
Yeah, Crazy Stupid Love, starring Julianne Moore, Marissa Tomei, and Ryan Gosling.
And Kevin Bacon, too.
Oh, you're personal friends with Kevin Bacon, aren't you?
I like how in your world, anytime you meet someone, you automatically become personal friends with them.
I'm just a caring individual who welcomes anybody he meets into his open arms and treats them like family.
I understand, but I don't know if the other parties would consider
themselves...
Yeah, exactly.
I'm getting the idea that it's not, hence, the what you would call a...
You've met a lot of...
Shit, I forgot the word I was going to use. What's that thing where the cops make you stand so far away from it? A restraining order.
Yeah.
That's what I was talking about. Okay. Yeah, you could probably edit that all out.
No, I'm keeping it in. It's all right. Let's go ahead and do your new game, Up Your Specs.
Yeah, I forgot all about that. Let's hit that game show music. All right, welcome to Know Your Specs, or now titled Up Your Specs, the game where confidence can win or ruin the day. We've all seen how this game is played, but let me give you a quick rundown with our guest, Ben Pearson. Ben R. Pearson, I believe is his full name. Each contestant's given three categories, and you choose the one you're more confident in guessing: the year of a movie, the director of the film, or the star of the film. The star, of course, is the first billed actor or actress or voice actor. In Video Hound's Golden Movie Retriever, the complete guide to movies on all home entertainment formats. No, they do not endorse this show, but we would like the sponsorship nonetheless. So let's begin. We have our three categories. Which one, Ben R. Pearson, are you prepared to guess the answer for? Year, director, or star?
Let's go star.
Okay, star. We have three movies. I'm going to pick a movie. Mm-hmm. It's an animated film. It's an animated film.
Mm-hmm.
I need you to give me the top billed voice actor.
Okay.
This animated film. Are you ready?
I am.
Princess Mononoke.
Ooh. I'm going to say Claire Danes.
Oh, that is correct. I was really hoping you'd pick... what's her name from Gross Point Blank?
Minnie Driver.
Today. Minnie Driver, thank you.
Mm.
All right, you guessed the star correctly. Very good. I made these a little harder, although that one doesn't show anything. Since last week, you just dominated this game, so I made it a little bit more difficult.
All right.
All right, between the two last categories, year and director, which one are you more confident in guessing?
I'm going to say director.
Director. Okay, we got a movie from 1994, 1984, and 2005.
Let's go 94.
94. Who directed the lovable classic Angels in the Outfield?
Oh, wow. I have no idea.
Daniel Stern. Pretty sure Gary Busey was the Rocket in that.
No, that was Rookie of the Year.
Oh, that was Rookie of the Year. I'm sorry. Rookie of the Year had Daniel Stern, too. So, okay, Danny Glover was in Angels in the Outfield.
Christopher Lloyd.
Christopher Lloyd was the angel. That's right.
How about... And Joseph Gordon-Levitt, actually. Not just new movie's favorite, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
That's it.
I'm gonna say Christopher Columbus.
Ooh, good guess. Not even close. William Deere directed Angels in the Outfield.
Okay, nice. Nice work, Mr. Deere.
Oh, yeah, very good. Very good film. Although you probably could have used The Rocket. Probably would have upped that film a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the angels were just making balls go out. Like, that's clearly cheating.
They were definitely cheating, but...
Like, the angels should have delivered some type of motivational message to make the players actually play better.
Do it
Although
themselves.
I think the last game they did end up playing for themselves.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in, like, 17 years.
Yeah, me neither.
All right, so our last category is year, and I'm going to give you a random one that you're probably not going to guess.
Okay.
Cheech and Chong Still Smoking. What year did Cheech and Chong Still Smoking come out?
1982.
Oh, so close. 1983.
Oh.
So you made it up one rung of the three-rung ladder to the top of your specs. Let's keep playing. I still have a couple options.
All right.
Who was the star in 2001's Amelie?
Oh, what is that girl's name?
Chris? believe she appeared in a number of films.
Frances
Gemma Arterton.
She was in The Da Vinci Code. She was in Coco Before Chanel. What is her name? She's...
The film Act.
I know what it is. It's Audrey Tautou.
Oh, very good. Yes. Saved in the nick of time. Who was the star of The Wiz? I believe 1984. Very famous musicians.
I'm going to say Diana Ross.
Wow, very good. She played Dorothy. And, of course, Michael Jackson playing, I think, the Scarecrow.
I think that's right. I've never seen it, but I think that's right.
I've seen the end of it, where she starts to sing in, like, pitch blackness. I'm like, this is gay. Click. who directed the famous 1984 Academy Award-winning film Amadeus?
Wow.
An extremely boring but riveting film. I really enjoyed it.
Maybe Peter Weir?
Oof, I have no idea who that is, but it's not correct.
Okay.
Milos Forman.
Milos Forman?
Milos Forman, yeah.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, all right. And who directed 2005's, I'm going to say lovable classic again, Bewitched? Director of Bewitched. Television show turned movie starring the incomparable Nicole Kidman, possibly the greatest actress of all time because of Batman Forever,
right.
And the always replaceable but fairly entertaining Will Ferrell.
Man, you have a knack for picking like the most middle of the road movies that have like.
I guessed all my easy ones last week, so I had to step it up.
Who
directed The Brothers Bloom, buddy?
These are movies that have like
all time.
These are movies that have like no discernible style to them. They're just kind of like studio comedies. That
the thing is, Bewitched would have been easy to guess had I put it in the year category or the star category.
Yeah, no, I get you. I understand why you did it. I'm not complaining about it. I'm trying to make an excuse for not knowing the answer, and I can't come up with a good one. So I'm just gonna say maybe David Dobkin.
Where are you coming up with these directors? I know like five directors, but that's incorrect. It's Nora Ephron, I believe her third mention.
Oh no, I should have known.
She directed Julie and Julia, and then you guessed Nora Ephron last week, and I put another Nora Ephron movie up in there.
Pretty, I think that's now become a tradition of Up Your Specs. It's like, where is Nora Ephron gonna pop in?
That should be the sub game. Which one of these has a tie to Nora Ephron?
Yeah, and if you get that one right, you get like an extra 200 points.
Yeah. 200,000 bonus question. All right, let's finish out this little game. What year did Cannonball Run 2 come out?
That was suggested by a listener last week. Man, I'm going to say 1987.
Oh, 1984.
Oof.
Then, of course, one of your favorite movies of all time, the year Witless Protection came out.
Dear God.
Starring the...
The not incomparable.
The not Jeff Foxworthy Larry the Cable Guy.
Dude, I don't
if
know.
If you mow your lawn and you find a car... You might be a redneck.
I'm going to say 2008.
Wow, nice job. Good save. He came back and won it with Witless Protection.
Okay.
Thanks, Sir Joe, for reminding me of that you might be a redneck joke.
Yeah.
We had a good laugh on the phone, passing those back and forth.
Yes.
You want to hear some more?
No, I'm good, dude. I'm good.
I'd have to bring up the Wikipedia page for that.
Right, yeah. All right, well, let's go back and forth and just tell people where they can find us on the internet. Let's wrap this action up. Tyler, where can people track you down this week?
This week?
Sure, well, anytime.
Anytime? Okay, well, you can find me at NJNM Podcast, the Twitter account.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Yep.
You can find me at the Solar Sentinel, where I just posted a happy birthday to MTV top 7 list.
Okay.
And
that's at the solarsentinel.blogspot.com.
That's correct. I oversee the articles that are published there.
Yep.
And then destigen.blogspot.com, another site that Panther Joe and I have been, I'm going to say, tirelessly working on for about a year now.
Yeah.
And it's coming to a close. So if you haven't been keeping up, now's a great time. Well, I guess after we're done, that would be a great time to go back in the archives and start from the beginning.
Yeah, and catch up with it. It's a fictional wrestling blog that you guys have been doing for a while.
Fictional wrestling narrative, yeah. That's a good way to call it. Lots of twists and turns, lots of characters to keep your eyes on, some of them real, some of them fake.
Yeah.
Rip-roaring good time. I know it's one of your favorite blogs.
I mean, I do read it, and it is astounding to me how much detail you guys put into that and like how much effort for something that, I mean, I'm not trying to be insulting, that really probably doesn't get as much. Let's see, maybe, how do I put this?
We have four readers, Ben. Thanks for reminding us. although, don't let him fool you. He has it as his homepage. So
I have it bookmarked, and I check it readily, so I recommend that everyone do the same.
That thing?
Even if you don't listen or like read wrestling material or watch wrestling, it's still some pretty intriguing storylines going on there. So
wrestling is the tool we use to tell a greater story.
Right. Yeah.
Featuring wrestlers.
Yeah, it is so intricate, the stuff that you guys have got going on.
A lot of the intricacies have to deal with Joe. Like, we brainstorm a lot, so.
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting After Midnight.
Yeah.
You and Joe, just talking it out, man.
Yeah, interesting.
Talking best again. We'll where can we find you, Ben R. Pearson?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you guys can track me down at twitter.com/BenPears. You can find me writing occasionally at geektyrant.com, filmonic.com, notjustinmovies.com, the namesake for this podcast, and you can hear me on the Geek Tyrant Weekly podcast. That actually reminds me, Tyler, one thing that I wanted to mention when you were talking about Thundercats earlier. I posted my review... I posted my review of The Clock at geektyrant.com, and I went back a couple days later to check and see if anybody had written any comments about it, and some guy was like, you post a review about a movie about clocks, but you don't write anything about the new Thundercats series, and you call yourself geeks.
Wow.
I was like, oh,
that is the kind of scathing review we need at this podcast.
Yeah, that's what we're looking for.
Get on your high horse and spit at us.
I wish that could...
Spoiled sons of bitches.
I might change
entertainment.
The tagline of this podcast to "Welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast. Get on your high horse and spit on us."
Like that guy. I mean, I'm sure there was a Thundercast review. It just hadn't been written yet. And as far as questioning the geek culture of that site, like if you look at the main page and see how many articles are written per day.
Yeah, and how many of them are...
He chose to click on the Clock review, which I'm sure it's a fine review. I've read it.
Right.
And then he assumes that article is the like captaining the ship of articles at that site. No insult to you, but
no,
that guy, I
totally get it.
He needs a stone thrown at his forehead.
Oh, or just to glance at three other articles on the homepage and know that it's a geek-centric site.
Hey, look, a Dark Knight Rises film photo or something.
Yeah, anything. All right, well, that's enough of our ramblings for the day. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be watching Pitch Black, the Vin Diesel classic, I'll call it.
Raging 99.
It's available on Netflix Watch instantly, so feel free to check it out. Drop us a line, notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. Leave us a voicemail, 904-469-6566. Do it. and seriously, guys, thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the show and everything, and we will see you guys next week.
To Persia!
To Persia, indeed.
I've got the blues. I've got the blues for you, yeah. I got the blues, yeah. I got the blues. Money that I had.